So Hunter, we got Bronson on the line. What do you want to ask him?
What stuck out about multifamily versus the other assets out there that made you go specifically into it?
Yeah, so I call multifamily, it's like the gateway drug. You know, I'm not a drug user or anything, but I know there's certain drugs that like get people on other things. And so it's like an investing addiction, right? So I started with single family. There's a saying that when the student is ready, the teacher appears. So for me, my teacher was a relative of mine that I hadn't seen in years. And he was a real estate guy. And I didn't really know what he did. I just know he did really well. And so I told him my plan to get 30 single family houses. And he's like, you know, that sounds like a lot of work. Everybody I know that's done multifamily wishes they had started sooner. Why don't you do multifamily?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'd love to, but I don't have the money. And he said, you can raise the money.
This is the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast, and I'm your host, Brian Briscoe. Now, this podcast is designed for the aspiring apartment investor and literally gives them the opportunity to ask the questions that will help them get to the next level. So if you're an aspiring apartment investor, this podcast is for you. Now, this podcast is brought to you by the Tribe of Titans Multifamily Educational Community. It's your one-stop shop for learning how to succeed at apartment investing. Welcome to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast. I'm your host, Brian Briscoe with Streamline Capital. Very excited for today's show. We've got second time guest and experienced investor, Bronson Hill. And we have our aspiring investor today, Hunter Scott. So guys, welcome to the show today.
Thanks, man. Excited to be here.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And just for the listeners, Bronson was one of the very first guests on this podcast, you know, way back in 2020. So 3 years later, almost to the month, I'll look that up. But 3 years later, here you are again, Bronson. So do us a favor and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, man. It's good to always good to connect with you, man. I love the value you're adding to the space and helping people to grow their wealth through real estate investing. So So I was a well-paid medical sales professional. I was making over $200K a year selling medical devices. So I would go into surgery and I would wear scrubs and tell doctors how to use their heart surgical equipment. And it was interesting and I enjoyed it, but I wanted to become more passive. I wanted financial freedom, which to me meant freedom over my time. And so I started learning about real estate, did some single family stuff, and I realized it was a lot of time and not a lot of money. And then I learned about syndication and I just started figuring out how to raise money. So I started a meetup, found some investors, made a partnership. We raised a bunch of money. So now it's been 4 or 5 years later, I've raised $36 million, quit my great corporate job a couple of years ago and just loving life, doing a lot of, we have about $200 million in multifamily. And then we have also things like ATM machines, car washes and oil and gas and some other alternative stuff.
Nice, nice, nice. So last time we talked, you were with a different company and then you spun off on your own. If you don't mind, let's talk about that a little bit. You know, what prompted you to go from a company working for somebody else, and it was you were investor relations to doing your own thing?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that's interesting when you start doing real estate, a lot of times, especially from single family, we had a small single family portfolio. You're really used to kind of doing everything yourself. At least for me, I was, you know, kind of be acquisitions. I worked with a property manager and like a real estate agent, but for the most part, it was just me. And so what I learned about multifamily and larger deals is that it almost always is a team effort. It's never just one person, especially if you have more than, you know, 60 to 100 units. So I basically found I could partner with somebody who had a huge platform and was training other people to do a raise money, but they were having some challenges raising money. Mm-hmm. And then we raised a bunch of money. We raised $15 million together over a period of about 18 months. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of both decided, hey, you know, I just don't really think, we don't really think this is maybe a good fit going forward. And they've grown what they want to grow and I want to do my own thing. And so since then I've raised over $20 million since we parted ways, but we parted amicably and got some great experience. And I think that's the thing when people are starting out is, you know, being willing to partner with others and to leverage not just your own experience, but the experience of other people and of a team.
Yeah. So what was your biggest challenge starting on your own?
A couple of challenges. One is when you hang a shingle and I had a job. So I had a job I was getting paid to do. And I started posting on LinkedIn and, you know, different social media. And then I had bosses started, hey, what's this Bronson equity thing? What are you doing here? What's going on? Mm-hmm. And so navigating that, I didn't understand there's actually people that you can block on social media and they don't necessarily know that you block them. They just can't find you or search you. So you can do that on LinkedIn. You can do that on Facebook. So I recommend that people block bosses on there before they start growing their brand. That was one challenge. And then I think just having enough time to do everything, right? Being able to say, hey, I'm working full time. can I, you know, I had a flexible job, so maybe I could do it in, you know, 25, 30 hours a week, but my performance wasn't as good as it was before. So kind of navigating that and realizing that I had some passive income, but I wanted to get enough where it to where it covered my expenses. So just kind of balancing that out and figuring out, okay, what really is stable income here? What if this is going to go away if real estate struggles? So just knowing when to leave a job too, that's also pretty challenging.
Yeah. For me, I mean, I went through a lot of the same decision process. The win for me was really easy. It was like as soon as I hit my 20-year mark and it was like done for me. But yeah, a little different situation there. So now you mentioned you've raised capital for several different asset classes, or you've been able to invest in several different asset types, you know, multifamily and car washes, oil and gas. So tell us about, you know, how you choose what to invest in and with whom to invest.
So I think, there's a lot of factors there. I have a book coming out called Fire Yourself, How to Replace Your Working Income with Passive Income in 3 years or Less. And this basically comes in how to vet a deal, right? Whether you're a partner and you're actively doing a deal and you're wanting to bring it to other investors or you're investing yourself, it's the same factors. And it's like a funnel. So at the top, you've got the market. Below that, you've got the operator, and then you've got the deal, right? So the market could be in Jacksonville, Florida, we've got about 1,500 multifamily units. We love Jacksonville. It has population growth, job growth, income growth, landlord friendly, business friendly, all kinds of factors that are great for real estate investing. Yep. The same thing exists when it comes to things like, you know, the ATM market or oil and gas market or, you know, car washes, or what is that particular market? What are the pros and cons? Is it growing? Is it shrinking? What are the things, what's going on in that market? Then from there, once you feel like the market fits, then you go to like, well, who is this team you're working with? And I think one of the biggest things it comes down to is values. I used to think everybody had the same values when we worked together, but I realized they don't. Not everybody wants to communicate really well. A lot of people just want to raise the money and never speak with investors again. And that's not the way we operate. We want to have a great communication, a great process with our investors. So making sure values are on the same page, and then the deal itself is, does the deal, you know, fit your parameters? And also I think a couple of big things on a deal is, do you understand how you're going to make money and what are the one or two primary risks of ways you could lose money? And if you don't understand the ways you could lose money, you probably don't understand the deal well enough. So there's a lot that goes into it, but I think the market, the operator, and the deal, they're all important.
Yeah, they are all important. Now, if you had to rank them, how would you rank them?
I mean, the reason I do it as a funnel, as I say, they typically come to us in reverse order, meaning you're on somebody's list, here's a deal, right? So it's presented as a deal,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. So it comes as a deal. But at the top, you've got the market. So again, if you're in, and we watch this, you know, Brian, you know, have been in real estate for a while. So you watch from between 2010 and 2020, you could do just about anything and it didn't really matter, right? You were just in the right asset. It was growing. There was all these tailwinds and interest rates coming down, all this stuff. Didn't really matter, right? Because the market was the right market. And then of course, operators, you know, it is very important, but you know, Warren Buffett has a saying, if you're in a bad business environment or a bad sector and you have great managers, the business sector is the one that wins, right? So if it's a bad market, it doesn't matter how great your managers are if you're in a terrible place to be. And so being in the right market is important. And of course, being with the right people is great. And the deal itself is, I think it's important, but it's what you look at last, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I've always put the operators first. Now I'm a multifamily exclusive, so I'm not looking at, you know, ATMs. I'm not looking at the car washes and everything else, but from just a multifamily perspective, you know, I think I put sponsors first, market second, deal third, but pretty close on that one. But, all right. So let's see. One question I ask everybody, and that's, what's your why? What's your motivation for doing all of this?
You know, like I mentioned, financial freedom is huge. Being able to travel is awesome. Being able to have time with my daughter is great. My big why and kind of my big, hairy, audacious goal that I'm looking to do is to end modern day human slavery in the world. So they say today in 2023, there are 20 to 40 million human slaves today. It's just absolutely staggering, more than there's ever been in the history of the world. And it just keeps getting worse. And so it's a big, hairy, audacious goal. I mean, we can give money. We can, you know, create awareness, do whatever we can to stop it. And it exists pretty much in every city of the world, including the US. And so people don't really realize this is there. So that's my big why, is trying to end that.
Nice. I love it. Now let's break down one of the deals you've done. So pick one, first, your favorite, your most recent, whichever one you want to talk about, and let's dissect it a little bit.
Well, my first deal, I could talk about my first deal, but I think we should talk, let's talk about alternatives. Yeah. I think I love talking about alternative investing these days, because I feel like when it comes to cash flow, I think things like, well, I guess we can talk about ATM machines or oil and gas. I mean, those are always exciting. Or
if let's you do oil and gas. I know a little bit about ATMs. I know almost nothing about oil and gas. So let's do that.
So oil and gas. So one of the reasons I got interested in other assets is because I saw as rates started going up, a lot of the cash flow that I was getting in my multifamily deal started to be pinched. And I thought, well, how can I do things that also generate cash flow for investors as well as us and kind of make myself a little different? So I started shifting to go to some of these different alternative assets. So we've raised, I think, just for alternatives outside of real estate, probably over $15 million just for those. So oil and gas, there's some major benefits. One is obviously commodities. You know, it's always going to be needed. There's a lot of money going into the green agenda, which I think is great, but we're underinvested into oil and gas. And so for those that, you know, a lot of these big funds such as BlackRock or other groups, they're actually choosing not to invest in any sort of fossil fuels or anything like that, which creates some real opportunity for private investors that are willing to do that. So we're seeing that there's also some amazing tax benefits that could potentially reduce against ordinary income. So a lot of times most, you know, real estate investments only offer passive tax losses unless you're a real estate professional. But some oil and gas deals do offer some pretty significant tax advantages. So there's cash flow, there's appreciation. We have a deal we've done that's very similar, where we've got 140 wells on one large property, and it's working interest. So we're not actually doing the drilling. We're partnering with operators that are already drilling in this area. There's 140 wells, and we have the right, but not the obligation, to participate in more wells. So we're taking the first year of cash flow and just putting it back into these 45 additional wells that are going to generate more cash flow in the future.
Awesome. And you say tax advantages that can cancel out ordinary income.
Correct. Yeah. It's deal specific. Some deals have that factor, some don't. Obviously, it's a huge benefit if you make a lot of money to be able to find ways to especially if you're like a W-2 earner or something like that. That's the hardest income to try to reduce, but it can be done through some creative strategies.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Awesome. All right. Well, last question coming up, and that's, what's next for you?
I think for me, just continuing to try to provide value. Like I mentioned, we've got our book coming out. We've got a conference coming up in October, the Advanced Real Estate Investing Summit. Hopefully we'll have you there. It'll be awesome. We're going to cheer on some football on too. You wear your football colors, I'm sure.
Exactly.
So that's going to be a fun event with Ken McElroy, Neil Bawa, Ferris Musa, some others in LA. And then just continuing to try to provide value. We are starting a mastermind for high net worth investors. It's more of a deal flow mastermind. Mm-hmm. It's not a teach people how to do active real estate. It's more of a past investors mastermind. Mm-hmm. So for deal flow and community. And so we're starting that. But you know, always got new ideas, man. Just trying to focus in on the right ones.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we're going to shift gears and bring Hunter on. So Hunter, welcome to the show today.
It's good to be here. I appreciate you having me on today.
Absolutely. Well, do us a favor and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I'm on the younger side in the real estate space. 21. I'll actually be 22 the end of August. August 31st, I'll be 22.
Nice.
Got into real estate about 2 years ago through a mentorship program. And, you know, before that, we'll take it back, you know, kind of to high school, you know, just start from fresh from the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always knew I had an entrepreneur type mindset. I've always had to work for stuff I wanted, whether that was, you know, doing gardening for my uncle to make a buck, or, you know, mowing the grass, whatever it was. You know, I was always trying to make my own money, come from a, you know, lower income family. Mm-hmm. So, you know, growing up, I never got the things that I wanted, and I was shown that I had to work for those things that I wanted. So once I got to working age, got a job at Papa John's, quickly kind of climbed the ranks there up into a managerial position once I turned 18. And then once I graduated from high school, ended up going to trade school while still working as a manager, as well as working in the field. So working two jobs as well, going to trade school. Eventually kind of transitioned away from Papa John's, started doing the trades more full time, and then ended up getting back into pizza industry with Domino's as a manager. And right before almost moving up to assistant GM, I found real estate at that point and decided that real estate was the path that I wanted to go. Like I said, I found, you know, specifically the multifamily mentorship program. Mm-hmm. And after seeing what the business and industry could really provide for the future, it was able to provide anything, you know, in my wildest dreams that I could ever want and the lifestyle that I wanted to live. And, you know, ever since then, I've just been kind of full, you know, full throttle, 100% in on this business. Still do currently work at W-2 as, you know, still in the HVAC industry, but also kind of incorporating the HVAC industry as well, going forward with my master kind of plan that I have in my head into the real estate space as well. So that's kind of where I'm at today.
Nice, nice. And, you know, glad you found it early. I wish I would have found it as early as I did. And thanks for sharing all that. Very much appreciate it. One question that I ask everybody, you talked a little bit about it, but I just want you to go a little deeper on this. What is your why?
You know, there's multiple different, that's, you know, it's a wormhole for sure. You know, there's multiple different kind of things that factor into that. You know, personally, I want to live a very nice lifestyle. One of my goals is to own a private jet, Gulfstream G650, about $50, $60 million. So that's not cheap. So personally, you know, just living a very nice lifestyle. But other than that, you know, retiring my parents is a huge thing. They gave everything, you know, that they possibly could and did everything. You know, they've always wanted to see me succeed. Mm-hmm. And they're getting older. So I want to be able to, you know, let them see the success that I can build, as well as help them retire and, you know, buy them their dream cars, buy them their dream house, you know, let them live the rest of their life how they want. And as well as kind of a little bit about Brunson talked about is giving back into the world. I come from a veteran or a military family, and veteran homelessness is really, you know, kind of hits me hard. So, you know, eventually down the road, I would like to create a charity focused around helping veterans get off the roads, get off the streets, and kind of incorporate a possibly education or some sort of skill that if they didn't have one coming out of the military, like a trade, like, you know, something that they can learn very quickly in a few years that they can make good money on, get them back on the right path to success, and, you know, even potentially house them depending on kind of where the situation is at. Also, as well with, I want to do a charity for stray animals as well, and kind of, you know, get them off the streets, take care of them, rehabilitate them, and get them out to the right home. So.
Awesome. Looking forward to see what kind of impact you can put on the world here. So, well, come to that part of the show where I get to sit back and, you know, so Hunter, we got Bronson on the line. What do you want to ask him?
Yeah. First and foremost, you know, I know you talked a little bit about those alternative assets, which is, you know, very intriguing. But what got you into multifamily? You know, what stuck out about multifamily versus the other assets out there that made you go specifically into it, and specifically more syndication as well?
Yeah. So I call multifamily, it's like the gateway drug. You know, I'm not a drug user or anything, but I know there's certain drugs that like get people on other things. And so it's like an investing addiction, right? So I started with single family. There's a saying that when the student is ready, the teacher appears. So for me, my teacher was a relative of mine that I hadn't seen in years. And he was a real estate guy. And I didn't really know what he did. I just know he did really well. And so I told him my plan to get 30 single family houses. And he's like, you know, that sounds like a lot of work. Everybody I know that's done multifamily wishes they had started sooner. Why don't you do multifamily?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'd love to, but I don't have the money. And he said, you can raise the money. So to me, it was just a very understandable, easy way to get started, because I had lived in houses, I'd lived in apartments. I understood how it worked. I think real estate is probably the easiest thing for people to understand, both as a passive investor as well as an active investor, you know, versus having, if I were able to get to 30 houses or 100 houses, wherever I wanted, that would have been incredibly inefficient to try to manage, right? You've got all these different locations. You've got to pay a guy to go to the one house, then go to figure out what parts needed to repair something, then go to Home Depot and get part, then come back, whatever, and then do that for every single house, versus with 100 units, you've got them all in one location. So, and you know, you get a discount on the repair guy's time. You have one set of plumbing, you got one roof. Mm-hmm. It's all similar colors. And so there's a lot of efficiencies when it comes to multifamily. And so I just saw it was very understandable. And of course, the fact you can use debt to buy it is very attractive with some tax benefits. So I think that, you know, at the time, I really didn't see anything else that was really understandable and really that attractive. So that's what really drew me to it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Bouncing off that idea that you said about it being very understandable for investors, have you ran into some investors that it's almost made too much sense, and it's been too, like, I've ran into it where some investors just, it makes almost too much sense to them, and they think it's some kind of pyramid scheme or Ponzi scheme, or, you know, it's just, it's too simple for it to, you know, work and get the returns and the benefits that they get from these properties.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've never done something, it feels impossible, or it just feels like, is that even a thing? Is that real? I mean, when I first heard about syndication, I was like, what the heck is that? I mean, I only heard of syndication was like TV shows and crime syndicate mob bosses or something. And so like, I had no idea. Right. And so, but I think, you know, the more you get around it, the more I've talked to people about it, the more I've realized, you know, there's some people that are never going to take action, but then there are people that are going to take action. And that's why doing a podcast and shows like this and YouTube, it just, people can find you, right? When you're virtually, versus if you're trying to tell all your neighbors and all your friends, they may all think you're crazy, But, you know, there's people out there that already have some awareness of it. Or if you're just out there, somebody doing, you know, doing education in the space, you know, eventually people will become comfortable. I have found one thing that makes a lot of passive investors more comfortable is meeting other passive investors that have been investing for at least 5-10 years or more. And so when I started meeting people, I've been doing this for 10 years and whatever. And that's the amazing thing about passive investors is typically they have nothing to sell, right? They're not trying to push anything. They're just simply trying to help. And that's why I tell people that are passively investing, like, hey, you should make friends with other passive investors, because it makes these things that seem really weird, it makes them very normal, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you meet people that are full-time passive investors that left their job and are now invested in dozens of deals, and this is all they do full-time, well, now it's real because you met somebody who did it. Until then, it's just an idea or a concept, right? So I think those are a few things just to remember, is that everything's weird until we try it. And the more we get around people that are in it, the more we can grow. Okay.
Yeah. And I think every investor comes with every investor who's never done with it will typically come with questions and hangups. You know, the ones who are, you know, pointing at Ponzi, you mentioned it, the Ponzi scheme. It's weird. You know, if they come thinking it's a Ponzi scheme, I have a very, very hard time convincing them otherwise, you know? So I've learned that, you know, if they start pointing at, hey, Ponzi scheme, scam, everything else, I have a hard time changing their minds. So typically I look for people who are just a little more receptive to the idea. And, you know, let them, like, there's a guy that I used to work with that used to call me the slumlord, you know, because I was, you know, buying apartments and whatever. But, you know, I never tried to convince him otherwise, you know, it's just like, all right, whatever, you know, keep on calling me that. But that's, you know, that's fine. But anyway.
Yeah. One of the thoughts too on that is that it's the idea too, that when we raise money, a lot of people think we have to be, or in sales, we've got to be hunters, right? You know, always be closing ABCs, always go out and, you know, make sure that they get into, well, I don't think hunting is the best way to do this business. I think farming is a much better way. And how does that work? A farmer doesn't go out, they plant and they water. And how do we do that? Like, we do that through education. We do it through shows like this. We have books and eBooks and other things that are out there. And we just keep watering. And then when we have a deal, we just announce that we have a deal, and the fruit that's interested, or the people that are interested, they let us know, right? And how does a farmer figure out if a fruit, you know, is ready? They go and they go to the apple tree. The apple comes off, then you'll know the fruit's ready. If not, you wait and you leave it there. You don't yank it and try to pull it down. So it's kind of like that with investors. Everybody's on their own journey. We're just simply adding value.
Yep. I like that analogy.
I like it. Yeah. I do. I like that. So you can take it back to kind of where your first, even before your first deal, when you first got into kind of, you know, on your own. I know you kind of transitioned from another firm. When you got onto your own, started that meetup, how long in that process did it take you from, you know, going out on your own to getting your first deal? And, you know, how beneficial was that meetup for you to build for those investors?
Yeah. So people wonder, you know, do you have a deal first, or do you start raising money first? That I say, you just always start raising money for you. Even if you don't have a deal, you just start getting the word out and start raising money. And so, I actually, before I even had my partnership, I raised a little bit of money from a meetup. And this, the first investor came from this way. I approached somebody who had a meetup in Los Angeles that was a great real estate meetup. And I said, hey, how about we start another meetup? It'll only be focused on multifamily, and you just show up and I'll do all the work. And they were like, that sounds like a great idea. So then we did this and promoted it a lot. We had 60 people show up at the first event. And at the first event, this guy comes up to me, I'd never met before, and he says, hey, I'd invest in one of your deals. And I was thinking, like, are you talking to me? What the heck? I don't even have a deal, whatever. Yeah. So, you know, there's a difference between being an expert and being a leader. A lot of people think they're the same. They're not. Being an expert is somebody who really knows the information, but you can be a leader in the space even if you're not an expert, simply by being at the front of the room, by asking questions, by leading an interview or something like that. So I was a leader. I wasn't an expert, but I met with this guy. He ended up investing in one of our deals from another guy I met at that same meetup who had a deal. So again, I didn't have a deal and this guy was interested, but I was able to kind of connect those two, the investor who had money and the person who had a deal. And so that's how I got started. And then going from there, to, you know, making that partnership, that was really powerful. And that taught me, you know, I had 1,000 one-on-one phone calls within the next 18 months of just, you know, talking with different people from this guy's network and kind of building this. And then when I went out on my own, it had taught me enough to kind of say, I just had a lot of experience. You know, by the first investor call, you're awkward. You don't know what to say. Hey, what do you want to be like? You don't know what questions to ask. And by the 50th one or the 100th one, you're kind of like, okay, I think I kind of know how this conversation goes. And you feel much more comfortable. So a lot of this is just like the 10,000 hour rule, right? Just getting the reps in. If you just get the reps in of having conversations with investors, talking about a deal, doing a presentation, These things, those are just skills that help make you more feel more comfortable when you're sharing, right? So it takes the pressure off of you and puts it more on, well, what is the actual deal and what is the relationship you have with these investors?
Yeah. And Bronson, I think you did something really smart where, I mean, you started a meetup, you put yourself in a position of authority, and you almost hacked somebody else's meetup. You know, in two ways, you put yourself in a position of authority. You took somebody who's successful at meetups and said, you bring the people, I'll provide the content. I mean, and he didn't have to bring the people. He just had to put his name on it. I think that was a really smart way of starting and putting yourself in a position where people look to you for advice and investments. So good job.
Thanks. Yeah, it was definitely a good, if you just align yourself with other people, that's the thing about team too, is my inexperience didn't matter if I had somebody in my team that had over 10 years of management experience, asset management experience. So that's why we think sometimes that, you know, if we're young, we're not gonna be able to do it. There's a friends of mine called the Donis Brothers. They live in the Carolinas, and they're raising, you know, millions and millions of dollars doing big deals and operating them in their early mid 20s. And how they do it is they just got tons of reps. They built the right connections. They have the right team and they're going for it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Bouncing off that, what's the importance of building a network and, you know, just having those people that you can go to that have that experience just for questions or partnership?
Yeah, I can't. I mean, this is something people talk about, but like more than anything else I've done, this is such a team sport, and you have to be not only have other team members, but also other mentors and people you can go to. I mean, I've got several people that I go to. I'm like, I got a situation right now. I'm like, I don't know what to do in this situation. I need to talk about this, or I need to talk about this specific thing, or I've got an issue over in this area with a partner. I've got an issue. An investor has this issue, whatever. Just having support in those things is really important because it really helps you to grow. It's not that you're going to get the perfect answer, but you're going to get a lot more experience than what you've had. So having that kind of multitude of counselors, I think is really helpful.
Yeah. I think it extends, having a good network extends to everything you do, especially in this business. I mean, your network is going to help you find investors and fund deals. Your network is going to help you find other people who are doing deals with whom you can partner. And depending on whatever level you're at, you know, that network is going to be your support where you essentially make all of your money. So yeah, I can't overstate how important that network is.
Yeah, it's huge.
Awesome. I mean, so let's circle it back around to, you know, talk a little more real estate. You know, everybody's always talking about taxes and how people don't pay taxes. So if you want to break down and kind of just explain, you know, how people don't pay taxes, you know, investing into multifamily real estate, because I feel like that's a really construed topic that a lot of people don't understand, you know, really, really well.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. Let me back up for a second. So when it comes to not paying taxes, there's two types of ways to not pay taxes. One is called tax avoidance, which is basically trying to get your taxable bill as low as possible legally, right? Tax avoidance. Now, tax evasion, people go to jail for tax evasion, right? They owe taxes, they don't pay them. They're two different things, right?
Yeah.
So why would the government give people incentives? I don't call them loopholes. Why would they give incentives around things like energy or real estate or other things? Why would they do that? Well, they do it because they have things that they need and they want, such as cheap energy for citizens. They also want housing, especially low or middle-class housing. And so by providing housing or providing energy as investors, we can do that. And so we get to share. And so if the government, you look at government housing projects, how are those, right? They're projects in the hood that are terrible places to live. No one wants to live there, right? Versus if somebody goes in and they build or they create a great living situation for a lot of tenants, they make it nicer. They really do something, they get some tax advantages for that. Now there's a few things that have changed the last few years, especially in real estate. We've had this 100% depreciation for like 4 or 5 years, where it was, you would basically, the total amount invested, often you'd get close to or about the total amount as a tax deduction passively for the first year. So if somebody invested 100K, they could get 90 or 100K on a lot of these value add deals in year one. Now that typically would only go against other passive gains if they'd sold an investment property or something like that, unless somebody's a real estate professional. But the tax advantages are great. I'm not a tax professional, so I'm not going to give anybody any specific advice. We are going to talk about this a bit at our summit, the Advanced Real Estate Investing Summit in October. But it's a topic I love talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say for a lot of the tax strategies, a lot of them kick the can down the road, you know, like the with real estate, you know, the depreciation that does end up just kicking the can down the road. And it's more of a dollar now versus a dollar later. So yeah, same thing, not a tax specialist. We, you know, we have a tax specialist that, you know, part of his billing us, you know, he'll hop on phone calls with a lot of our investors too. So yeah. So I would say understand from your position, try to understand it, try to talk with people who understand it. so you can help your investors understand what the potential benefits are as well.
Awesome. So as far as you've raised about close to what, $35 million you said so far for multifamily, or is that all across all assets?
That's across all assets, yeah.
Okay. As far as your investor base and even, you know, kind of at the property level, what's your thoughts on kind of, you know, really sinking down into a specific niche audience or a niche market? What are your thoughts on that versus kind of broadly more open marketing to all types of investors or, you know, multiple different markets?
Yeah, I think it's really important when you start out. This is, I think, one tip that I would give for somebody starting out is really try to niche down to who exactly is the person that you're trying to reach. We call this an avatar. So for me, when I started, it's changed a little bit, but there was a guy I worked with in the medical field. His name was Bart, and he was a medical device sales rep. He was in his late 50s. He had teenage daughters who were going off to college. He wanted to retire, but he couldn't afford to, couldn't figure out how to start developing passive income. And so I created a lot of information, a lot of stuff around, would Bart benefit from this? Is this something Bart would actually, it would be helpful for him, right? And so the more targeted we can be on that, now sometimes we don't know, and so we just kind of pick it. Now we've shifted a little more to go to business owners or people that have had a business they've sold, and there's certain issues we're trying to talk about that have, you know, that will really impact those guys. But I think it is really important to figure out who you want to reach, because if you find out one person to reach, literally you name them, you figure out what their issues are, what they're going through, their biggest challenges inside and outside of work and finance, just in life, where they hang out, all that stuff, then you're going to speak to many more. But if you don't do that, it's going to be too wide. I love Brian's thought on this too, because I know you've done a great job at this.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting. We are redefining our avatar, and, you know, it's something where I just pivoted recently about a year ago, created a new company and have a brand new focus on, you know, what our investments are. And what I didn't realize is what comes with that new focus on investment opportunities. And I think the biggest thing we're doing different is longer term hold times. Is we found that, you know, the people who were traditionally interested in what we were doing earlier are not always the same people that are interested in what we're doing now, you know. So we had to kind of retool our avatar a little bit. And that's exactly what the process we're going through right now is, you know, what do they do? Where are they in business? You know, and yeah, it's just going through that whole process. And what Bronson said earlier, and I think what he said is the key, you know, what are their pain points? You know, what keeps them up at night? What are the things that they want, and what are the things that they need? And when you start understanding, you know, putting yourself in the position of this avatar, you can start speaking to that person, and the things that you say will start resonating with this person, right? So, mm-hmm. So that avatar creation exercise, you know, is absolutely crucial. So when you're doing your marketing, you can actually sit down and say, would this appeal to Bart? Is this something that would resonate with Bart, you know, or Andrew, or whoever your avatar is, you know, right? So yeah, I think it is absolutely crucial. And, you know, like I said, we are going through the process to redefine our avatar, and we haven't picked a name yet, but we've narrowed it down. He's in a tech sales field, lives in the greater Salt Lake City area, and we're dialing down into age, into net worth, into income level, how many kids this person has, you know, where they live, what type of house they're in. So once again, you can understand and see the world through their eyes, so you know what type of ads and what type of marketing is gonna hit them.
I love the breakdown of how in depth that you kind of get. I love how you said see the world through their eyes to kind of see their perspective. That's a really good take. And, you know, kind of a more personal question for both you guys. So I'm specialized kind of on the capital side of the business as well. And I do have a niche audience, and it's probably the hardest to reach. It's professional athletes. My goal is to work with, you know, some of the top professional athletes in the world. So what kind of advice would you give me personally, you know, to reach that audience, to handle working with that audience, and just any kind of, you know, pointers or tips that you have as far as that?
I think it's a tough one. I think it's a good one. I think you have some athletic background as well. So I think just tapping into your network, following with coaches and former players and anybody, you know, and a lot of times I learned this actually from a former partner. He said, you know, you never really ask for the sale. So when you're with somebody, you never say, oh, hey, I've got this thing. Do you want to invest? You just say like, hey, I've got this thing going on. I'd love to get your thoughts on it. And at the end, you say, hey, do you know anybody that might be interested in that? Right. So what you're doing is you're kind of asking for like, hey, do you know anybody? But then they can self-select and be like, well, I'd be interested in that. Right. So you didn't really ask for the sale, but you did. So again, instead of directly asking somebody, you can send them something and say, hey, I want to get your thoughts on what you thought about this. And then, you know, do you know anybody that might be interested in something like this? Right. And so then it kind of like, it makes you less of a sales guy and like a hunter and more of kind of like, hey, I'm just going out there trying to figure out. And then, you know, another thing you could do is just, if you can get in front of some professional athletes or even some, you know, minor league or whatever, you know, just people that are on their way and say, well, what are their biggest issues that they're facing now? Or maybe some former professional athletes and just say, hey, you know, here's what I'm trying to do. What do you think? And what are some of the biggest challenges that athletes face? And you'll find out, you know, it may be very different than what you think. So I think, but the more you can speak the language of these are the biggest problems, you know, is it privacy? Is it saving taxes? Is it being, you know, really looking for somebody who's going to kind of manage their money and just keep them out of financial trouble? You know, it's like, I don't even know what that, you know, like we have an idea of what we think that would be, but until we have those conversations, we really don't know. What do you think, Brian? What am I missing?
Yeah, you know, it's back to the avatar thing, but there's a refinement process that goes along with it. I mean, typically we sit down and say, hey, what do we think this avatar's problems are? But the more you talk with your avatar, the more you get to understand exactly what it is. So from one standpoint, you know, you have to be able to talk to the avatar. You have to, you know, get down past the initial part of the conversation to see what really drives them, what their pain points are. And the second thing that we're looking at as far as our avatar goes is we have to come across as competent and professional. And so we're looking at the types of things that our avatar would deem as competent and professional, you know, all the way down to how we dress, you know, which is kind of important, you know, in some fields. You know, depending on your avatar, you know, some fields like the letters on the back of your name, you know. And so if my avatar was, you know, the type that wanted somebody with, you know, professional degrees, my LinkedIn profile would have a bunch of letters on the back of my name, right? So it all comes down to seeing the world through your avatar's eyes, you know. And part of seeing the world through your avatar's eyes is just having more and more conversations, you know, with somebody that meets your, you know, your avatar's description.
That's a really, I know you guys keep coming back to that point of looking through their perspective, but I feel like that's very, very powerful as, you know, as investors, because ultimately we're trying to get them to invest. So looking through their perspective, I feel like is a game changer. So what, as far as, you know, kind of more on the active side of the operation, what do you guys look for in partnerships when bringing in other, you know, GPs, co-GPs, you know, somebody bringing you a deal or bringing you money? What do you guys look for in that person or team?
I'm gonna interject. We got to make this a really short answer. So Bronson, you know, 30 seconds, go.
I look for similar values. I used to think we're all the same. We have different values a lot of times. So just, you know, what are the values? What do they say on their website? What do they say about themselves? What do they want? Do my values align? And also, what's the reputation? You know, what group do they come from? Can I ask around and quickly find out, oh, these are good people, or hey, they're not good people? It's a very small world in the investing space, at least in the multifamily space. And I know a lot of folks, so people can, you know, share reputation pretty quickly.
Yeah. And I place, you know, a lot of emphasis on values as well. I think more than anything else, you know, they have to be competent in what they do, obviously. But the first thing that we're checking is, do our values align? Okay. And if our values don't align, it doesn't matter. You know, nothing else matters. It's like, all right, full stop right there. You know, we're not going to continue the conversation. Right. But obviously, once the values do align, the other things Bronson said are important, the reputation, you know, and everything else is secondary to that, in my opinion. But anyway, we are about out of time. So last question for each of you. Bronson, you get to go first. How can listeners learn more about you?
Yeah, you can go to our website, bronsonequity.com. We've got our book, ebook created called How to Use Inflation to Your Advantage. I still think inflation is not 3%. I think it's more like 10%. So there's some strategies to use that are a little creative outside of real estate and other things and using debt and just things that probably haven't heard somewhere else. So that's at bronsonequity.com. We also have our investor club. I love connecting with folks talking about investing.
So what you're saying is, you know, what's most important with measuring inflation is who measures it. Is that where we're going with that?
Don't trust the government.
Yeah. But all right, Hunter, same question for you. How can investors learn more about you?
Yeah, you can check our website out, Legend Capital Investments, or, you know, check me out on Facebook, Instagram. Put out a lot of educational content around, you know, finances, real estate, and specifically around, you know, professional athletes and how they can, you know, make their money work for them and you know, what the steps are to take to, you know, make that first investment into real estate. So check me out. Yeah. Instagram, Facebook, Hunter_S.5. And also our Legends Capital Facebook and Instagram pages.
Awesome. Sounds good. And we'll make sure we have links to all that in our show notes. And guys, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Very much appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast by the Tribe of Titans. If you're still listening, you obviously liked it. So go ahead and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a 5-star rating and review if you haven't already. And then make sure to check out our YouTube channel, which incidentally has a ton of video content that you'll also enjoy and learn from. Now, if you're interested in being on the show, go to our website, diaryofanapartmentinvestor.com, and fill out the questionnaire on the website. And for more educational content and for more information about our educational community, check us out at thetribeoftitans.info.